You are listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast. Welcome to part two of this Kapiti Poets special episode for Matariki. If you missed part one, you can find it under Kapiti Poets at coastaccessradio.org.nz. I'd like to share now a poem read by me, but written by my brother, Richard Prosser, when he was living in central Otago, a place very close to his heart. Richard took his own life 3 years ago, having suffered from depression for about 20 years. I recorded this poem in the first weeks after his death, with the intention that it be played at his funeral. It was a very poignant choice for me. I discovered that someone had asked him online somewhere whether he had read the poem aloud at any time. His response was that he hadn't, and that he felt it could be up to someone else to take on that role. We'd never talked about it, I didn't know that, but in that moment it seemed right that that person should be me. The poem is called Bendigo, and it is there in central Otago that we scattered Richard's ashes. The poem will be followed by The Countdown Begins from Space Ride. Bendigo by Richard Prosser, read by Ingrid Prosser. There's a painted sky at the Bendigo, where the sun beats down from the Pisa snow. There's a painted sky and a sunburnt tree, where the clouds run wild and the hawks fly free. There's a painted sky and a morning star and a sunset seen in the distance far. There's a pastel dawn and a western glow, where the sheep still graze and the grapevines grow. And a lake that sits like a shining sea on the rocks and stones of the high country. And a day seems long where the time runs slow and the hot nor'westers dusty blow. There's a man on a horse with a rifle high and a dragon's mark on the brooding sky. Where the rocks lie bare and the gold runs deep in the river's tomb where the spirits sleep, with an ear for the wind and an ancient cry and the joy and the pain of the bones that lie on the face and heart of a barren land. Where the miners took from a giving hand till the hand took back when it felt content, and the gold and the grace and the men were spent. And the sky turned bleak under winter's chill, and the men and the earth and the rocks were still. And the river's voice was a silent song to the men who had lived and died and gone, as they followed the gold to Bendigo, where the sheep still graze and the grapevines grow. And they came with their farms on a changing tide, and they grew and they grazed on the bare hillside. And the wind and the sun and the plague and the snow was the price they paid to the Bendigo. There's a painted sky, and it tells a tale of a hard-built land where a man might fail, where his soul must be strong if as seed it would grow in the rocks and stones of Bendigo. There's a painted sky and a season new, and the vines reach out where the grass once grew, and they march and they spread on the sunburnt land, and the vintners take from a giving hand. There's a painted sky and a canyon deep where the hawks still fly and the memories sleep. And the grapevines grow where the town once stood, and the giving hand seems to think it good. And they toil in the sun and in the wind and the snow, and the wine and the river and the seasons flow. As the patterns change on the canvas high of this sunburnt land and its painted sky. There's a painted sky at the Bendigo, and a truth in the minds of the men who know that they live by the grace of that mighty hand in this desolate, beautiful, wind-burnt land. And the sun and the dry and the stones and the cold and the wind and the sky and the grass and the gold are the mark of the place where the voices say that a man couldn't wish for a better way than to live out his life 'neath a painted sky where the grapevines grow and the ghosts still lie. And we live and we learn and we reap and we sow midst the rocks and the bones of the Bendigo.
That was really beautiful, Ingrid. And it's that sense of taking me and being present in the landscape that I adore. And it was just redolent with that.
Yes, thank you. It really helped me with my grieving in those initial weeks to be able to focus on this poem and recording it to the best of my ability, and in a particular way because I thought that it was going to be played at the funeral, which didn't actually happen. But it was, I think the main thing was probably the fact that I did it. And then when the decision was made to scatter his ashes in that place that he'd written about, which I hadn't been to before. So it was really amazing, actually, to have that whole experience. Mm. And it is a wonderful place. And it was a lovely day with a blue sky. So, yeah. Another joy of our world is birds, and I love to celebrate them, including in my poetry. Here's my poem, Kereru, and we'll follow it with a poem by Nicola Easthope, which honours ancestral presence. That's called Developing. Kereru. The dawn chorus, well underway at 5 a.m., with the tuis chuff, 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 and now the liquid dropping tones of the bellbird, each upon a sooner sounding backdrop of less distinguishable warblings, callings, and songs, punctuated and followed by the rushing swoop of a heavier bird. These melodious wingbeats belong, I know, to the kereru, the most handsome bird of my acquaintance in these parts. The kereru. Keepers of understanding, elegant, enigmatic, richly feathered in gorgeous hues, so exquisite, surely a royal pigeon, yet sits upon the wires as our friend.
Kia ora koutou katoa, a ngā mihi tuatahi ki te mana whenua o te rohe nei, ko Tiatiawa ki whakarongotai. Just firstly, in this time of matariki and puanga, I'd like to acknowledge the mana whenua of this area. This poem I'm going to read is inspired by my ancestors, in particular my great-grandmother and my grandfather, who were in Bolivia during the early 20th century as part of a Presbyterian missionary station. And I found out in my research that my great-grandmother was an excellent photographer, and she took all of this heavy gear, old technology, to Bolivia to create her own photographs and develop them. So this is called Developing. Huey and his mother are pickling the dry plates. He helps her lift the printing frames to the window, sets out the trays in the cool washhouse, darkened by drape and awning. He counts to four in Quechua, one each for the developer solution, the acid wash bath, the fixer, the rinse. Watches Lorna mix chemicals from the glass bottles, helps her rock the dish. His mother is magic. She has caught the world drawn light from the altiplano in a fine dispersion of gelatine and silver, and now, his favourite part, the liquid play of negative alchemy. the faces of his family appear out of the dim. He could press his finger in, find whole hands, mouths ready to nip, kiss, giggle. He wishes to let loose his mother's aura of hair, entangle himself in the long strands of it. He and his sister make sure these pictures are safe across decades, so 110 years from now, their grown grandniece might have a photocopy of a photocopy. At the window, I tilt and trace, squinting, willing the black and white more alive. Over time, the light has spread well beyond its proper boundaries in a white halation of ancestral presence. Lorna, great-grandmother, you went out in the world directly with light. Your cheeks, eye sockets, high forehead rise towards me in an indivisible likeness.
Thank you to Nicola for sharing that poem with us. Jill, we're nearly ready for another of your extracts. Will you introduce it?
So we've reached through the six nights to day one, and the storyteller, who's been having a wonderful time weaving stories through each of the nights, you finally get to hear them tell the story of day one.
Excellent, great. Well, we're going to preface it with "The Journey Continues into the Unknown" from Space Ride, and follow it with another part of "The Countdown Begins" from Space Ride.
Day one, the storyteller speaks. The count is complete. Six nights, five stars, four nodes, three steps, two waka, one female uha. The geometry is set and placed into one great waka of stars lying at the horizon. Another waka. A glowing plasmoid, perfect of form, carrying information and on the move. Carrying within gods and green light, towing behind to Whairipo, setting sail. Following Pipiforoa on down, following the bars she bears, following the divine spark, the Fima Uha, following this gift of Matariki, her dove, her daughter. Everything is set for an event to occur. For, squeezed by the galactic curve sheet, till Ra, our newborn sun rising beneath Matariki, lets unleash a solar blast, a shockwave. Showers of gold, red, green, purple stream up from our south pole. The waka bends and twists as a convection stream from the inner core of Earth emerges in the Pacific Ocean, rises up and pulls it down, down, down. The waka throws a piece of itself out of the prow and front as an anchor stone. Behind to Whaerepo smashes into Tolrapa, the sternpost breaking it into pieces. Thwunk! The waka lands, not on hard earth, not on water, but floating on melted crust. With this landing, everything changes. Now, above is as below. There in heaven, here on earth, the geometry that was sent has arrived. The solar wind ceases. The crust cools and sets solid. The newborn sun, eyes wide open, looks down and sees a shield of protection, our magnetic field, over our earth. And waka, gods, green light to Whaerepo below, turn to stone. Blink. For the waka now is Te Waipunamu, our South Island. Te Whaerepo is our North Island. And the sternpost is the break in bays and islands between. The anchor stone, Stewart Island, and the gods, the mountains and lake beds of our southern Alps. The green light of the heavens is now the stone Punamu. And somewhere, everywhere, Pipiforo calls, Tioro, Tioro, Kui, Kui, Kui. Safely, safely, safely arrived.
I think it's now time to think about the future, which I believe is full of amazing possibilities for humankind, and symbolised nicely at this time by the juxtaposition of Matariki with the winter solstice, marking the return not only of the star cluster, but of the sun, with its light now increasing day by day.
Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. First, we'll have a poem by Michael O'Leary, which will be read by Nicola Easthope. It's called Shooting Star.
Shooting Star, for Moana. Standing at the breaker's edge as the waves roll in and out of darkness of the sea and the sky, watching the stars in the high heavens beaming down their fateful light, sparkling and shining. Suddenly, across the universe, shoots a red flash of falling star magic, and wishing to make a wish, I turn to you.
We'll start the next group of pieces with my poem City of a Million Steps, Wellington, of course, which I wrote last winter. It's dedicated with loving thanks to Darlene, Sarah and Annie, with whom I shared that evening of song. The poem will be followed by an extract from Space Ride in two sections, Solar Flares and Alien Landscapes, and then the last of Jill's epic extracts, Navigator Day One. City of a Million Steps. Wellington City in the light of Matariki. Street lights shining round the quays. A new year begins, borne away from the old,
And we take our triumph to the skies with upward eyes and the dignified motes of our existence speaking in numerous tongues. Oh, happy are the hearts riding the ways, ascending the rosy heights, and viewing the parade, the city's parade of shiplight and tree light and unoccupied buildings closed for business, yet trumpeting their diamond glitter for all the night to see. The light that is edged with darkness. For we land creatures know our limits. We will not walk beyond our depth. We watch the black pool of a sea from which a fountain lifts. It is the regal centerpiece of the bay, royally lit this night in purple, then in rich rose red, a changing scheme of hues leading on into flame of umber and dusky blue, oh, all untrammeled, that mystery shade of lightless blue. High above the city swings the risen moon, an old presidence this, ancient illumination of the night long before our time began, and not forgotten now, her waning crescent still the queen of Matariki lights on our celebratory nights amidst the offerings of memory and imagination and feeling. In this city of a million steps, a million viewpoints from which to sight the starry moon-led nights, the strings of brightness borne by trees, the sprays of coloured waters falling in the sea, at this Matariki re-emergence time, cascades of joyous notes are pouring forth into the city air from a congress of souls finding reason and rhyme in a larger telling of the heart. Their utterings of truth, the ultimate making of peace in this city of artful endeavour. Such beauties we share. Such evidence for dreaming hopes, where all the world is told of all that we would sing. Aroha nui, Matariki. Thanks and thanks and thanks again.
Day one, the Navigator speaks. The stars fade from view until Ra, the sun, rises directly beneath Matariki, now gone, in the northeast, and the light begins to grow. It is the northern limit of our sun, the furthest point away from us, the shortest day. From this day on, little by little, it will move back toward us, shining on us, islands of the double sea, floating low in the Pacific, anchored before the west wind's roar, directly on the back of the seam of the world. For on this day, Matariki, the long nights are over, and we have begun again at our beginning. Blessed be.
We've almost come to the end of the programme. Thank you so much, Jill. That's Jill Hemming, epic poet, everyone, for joining me. It's been really super. I'm really looking forward to hearing more of your epic later on. All the best with it.
Thank you for letting me perform it. It's been lots of fun.
We'll finish the programme with a final extract from my husband Colin Decio's Space Ride Through an Abundance of Splendours. This one's called The Dark Stars.
You have been listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast.
This programme was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio with support from New Zealand On Air.